This is The Light Inside. I'm Jeffrey Biesecker. Life, we often view it through the lens of finality. From the here of birth to the there of death, we experience the present. But what if that life's neither here nor there, and we exist within many differing planes of being all at once? In a world fixated on the immediacy of our current experiences, we often overlook the profound influence our past lives or even parallel existence may exert on our present reality. Today, in this journey of conscious discovery, we'll dive deep into our being to uncover the hidden layers of our existence and how these parallel experiences shape our perception of who and what we are. Up next, we discover how our path into present is shaped by the subconscious patterns we've inherited from the parallel echoes of our past, when we return to the light inside. When it comes to mobile service providers, with their high rate plans, extra fees, and hidden costs or expenses, many of the big name networks leave a bad taste in your mouth. Mint Mobile is a new flavor of mobile network service, sharing all the same reliable features of the big name brands, yet at a fraction of the cost. I recently made the change to Mint Mobile, and I can't believe the monthly savings, allowing me to put more money in my pocket for the things which truly light me up inside. Making the switch to Mint Mobile is easy. Hosted on the T-Mobile 5G network, Mint gives you premium wireless service on the nation's largest 5G network. With bulk savings on flexible plan options, Mint offers 3, 6, and 12-month plans. And the more months you buy, the more you save. Plus, you can also keep your current phone or upgrade to a new one, keep your current number or change to a new one as well, and all of your contacts, apps, and photos will seamlessly and effortlessly follow you to your new low-cost Mint provider. Did I mention the best part? You keep more money in your pocket. And with Mint's referral plan, you can rescue more friends from big wireless bills while earning up to $90 for each referral. Visit our Mint Mobile affiliate link at thelightinside.us/sponsors for additional mobile savings, or activate your plan in minutes with the Mint Mobile app. As humans, we often see life as being one-dimensional, black and white in its totality. We're born, we live, and then we die. But does the story truly end there? By shifting our awareness to the multidimensionality of our lives, we uncover a treasure trove of insights and wisdom that profoundly impact our growth and transformation. We're joined today by Alora Sage. As a shaman, she guides us toward uncovering the many mysteries that lie hidden within our past lives. Alora, today we're exploring how parallel lives and past family dynamics impact our subconscious belief structures and the role this has in shaping our relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was literally like, what are we talking about today? I was like, I'll just roll with it. It'll be good, whatever.
Yes, we were a little ambiguous about it in our pre-discussions, which tends to lead us to some of those subconscious patterns at times.
Absolutely. You got to just roll with it. That's all you can do, right? Just roll with the punches.
The best we can do in life.
Yep. Keep smiling and breathing and having fun with it all.
Yes.
Laughing like you're doing. A wonderful laugh.
For sure. Yes. Alora, share with me an overview of your program, what you tend to focus on, and what core aspects you're guiding your clients toward.
One of the things I do with my clients is I work with past life, parallel life, because of the way that these subconscious belief structures aren't even of just this life. And we come in with them, of course, and then we create them. And so we could talk about that. And, you know, I can speak to very specific ways in which, you know, how do we start to recognize this? And there's always like little drops and hints of things throughout our life. You know, there's a common thread, as well as there's oftentimes very specific images and information. Like, for instance, I've always just loved Black Panthers. And out of all the big cats, like Black Panthers, I was always just really drawn to. And, you know, just recently I went into a life and yeah, there was Black Panther as one of my power animals really strongly in that life. And like when I connected to that life, holy cow, like the emotion and the connection that I felt to that Black Panther really validated why I've just always like, I don't know, I just really like them. I have no idea, you know, same with like my drum. Like I've always just really resonated with drums, but not all drums, like that bass shamanic drum energy. So those little things that, you know, come throughout our life, right? So I really work with my clients. I call myself the womb shaman because I actually go through the womb energy and the portal of the womb in through these other lives. But the other thing that came through is I also believe that our relationships are really one of the keys and that first family dynamic, right? Because that's what we choose to incarnate into. And the point of that family dynamic is to create and show us those unresolved traumas and karma of those other lives that are currently quantumly entangled with this one that we are still, as a soul, attempting to work through, right? So we'll pick those souls again that we have unresolved karma and trauma with so that we can hopefully realize what we're really trying to understand on the subconscious end of things in this life. And so going back to those relationships is really, really powerful. And I would say it's one of those things that's very easy for people to really sit down and contemplate, right? Whereas past life, you know, I love talking about it. It's so profound because we can actually not only resolve our karma and our trauma, but we can bring in those gifts from those lives and reintegrate, remember those gifts. But sometimes it can be a little elusive for people. If we talk about your family, you know, who was your mother, your father, your siblings, or your caretakers, right? And what was your relationship? And really contemplating those relationships, you'll see the patterns over and over and over again.
As we consider the implications of these parallel experiences in that regard, how do we start to reconcile some of these patterns as they present themselves from our past lives and through our family histories?
It's very easy to me with that's just what your family is. They're, you know, this is not your first go with them. Just isn't. Yeah. And that's why we have, like, for instance, for me, and a lot of the work that I do is really, you know, I hold the container of the Ma, both for women and for men. And I had like a really challenging relationship with my mother. And there was never, you know, anything specific that she did or how she represented herself. But like, I resisted her very strongly. And, you know, in the last few years, we've really gone in this together and talked about it. And she's like, yeah, I just always really felt this resistance from you. And initially when she said that to me, I was like, oh, I thought it was coming from you, you know, and then it was like, yeah, okay. You know, and then when I went into the parallel life that we were connected, I held, wow, so much grief in that life of what happened in our relationship. And so I couldn't really come back to her and feel just really like her love and support. I couldn't actually feel her love and support in this life until I had resolved that. And of course, that showed up with practically every single relationship that I had with women. I was always, you know, challenged with my relationships with women. They never felt like there was, you know, just love and support. It always felt that there was a barrier or standoffishness. And so understanding that relationship with my mother and how that transcribed throughout my life was huge. I mean, absolutely enormous for me.
Our levels of ego development play an essential role both in how we form associations to our experiences and how we identify as a result of those interactions. Moving from beyond egocentrism to ego dynamicism also frees us from some of those ego constructs similar to those illustrated in the ego theories of Jan Levinger and Suzanne Cook Gruter. How do you feel the ego processes impact these past lives in that regard?
I don't know what those ideas are, so...
The unitive ego development theory summarizes how past experiences are crucial in shaping our identity constructs, in effect, providing us with the foundation of knowledge, beliefs, and values that shape how we perceive and interpret the world around us. This becomes a model of seeing our existence beyond the lens of a separate self, a fourth perspective of unified being, allowing us to reconnect with the collective state of consciousness where we no longer see ourselves as existing separately. That can be a challenging perspective to consider for many of us.
Yeah.
Just that idea of embracing the vastness of some of that becomes some of our greatest subconscious block simply because we're resisting the complexity of the universe. There's simple patterns that are repeated over and over that just form an ever-expanding complexity. Yet we have a fear of that unknown. Yet we have a fear of that newness. Yet we have an uncertainty that we're wrestling with rather than engaging with creativity and curiosity.
Absolutely. And, you know, I teach unity consciousness. And for me, I always teach that there truly are no others. There truly are no others. And we have the opportunity, and that absolutely comes into the space of curiosity, to become curious with regards to the reflection that we are experiencing through those relationships. Or we can just say, no, screw that. It's that person and da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. And, you know, and like you said, block that availability to ourselves and just simply deepen and solidify our own belief structures about who we are in relationship to, quote unquote, others.
I think it's our interesting parallel right there is finding that connection of unity. That to us, one thing we've kind of leaned to over the last 2 years is that idea of the unity of opposites that does realize where our individual character, where our individual traits, where our individual spirit and soul starts to shine through, where those lessons start to bloom in this present manifestation of who we are.
Yeah, I always say where polarity meets God is revealed, because I find most powerful lessons of self are in those opposites, you know, those seemingly opposites, because they're not really. They're the same coin, just opposing sides, the same coin. So when we allow opposites to be, which humanity just can't even do, right? Like, we just don't allow that the fact that there can be pain and pleasure in the same experience, or that there can be some, you know, right wing and left wing or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That we don't allow them. But when we allow them to actually inhabit the same space simultaneously as they are already, but we are just gifting our awareness to that which already exists, what happens is we experience them as the same. And my higher self has taken me on this journey several times, deeply in the process of experiencing different frequencies within the same. So I had an experience through the energy of hate, just in meditation, that then converted to love. And it was honestly the same point. And that's a hard one to understand. The other one that I think maybe people can understand a little bit more is pain versus pleasure. And when you really just sink into and relax and soften your body into pain, you can shift it into not just pleasure, you can actually shift it into ecstatic bliss. But we have to be willing to be with that which is, right? And that's where we struggle. We want to push it away. We want to say, no, I don't like that idea or that perspective, right? No. Whereas when we really allow, well, what if both perspectives can exist simultaneously? That's where we really experience wholeness and totality of self.
What message do you feel is calling through for you? Let me ask you that. I know you were, from my perception, engaged with your intuitive. So intuitively, what message do you feel is drawing through? I'll ask you that from that perspective.
I hear love. And I hear the conversation of what love really is.
I think that's an awesome point. How do we want to spell this out? Because there again, we keep mingling back to that idea of finding that unity.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, we transcend all concepts of self to truly re-engage with that love. Going through the levels of unity ego development, it's peeling away, you know, back to that kind of generalized concept, peeling away those layers of self, not to discard them or diminish them, but just simply to see them for what they are and evolve and adapt, emerge, blooming out into that unity again, to reconnecting and reuniting that ultimate state of love. All of those past beings we once were or we will ever be, transcending all of those levels and just showing up when they need to show up.
You know, love is the realization that we're all one. And I feel like that is really lost in context. Even in the spiritual community, it's really lost in the understanding of the person you disagree with, the experience or circumstance that is rubbing you the wrong way, that is difficult or challenging, that you don't like, that is perhaps even horrific, that that too is love. I see a lot in the spiritual community, the conversation of dark versus light. And I don't really agree with that. Actually, I don't agree with it. Because how can there be dark versus light in unity consciousness? There isn't. It is all love. But I feel like humans think of love as the emotion of love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's not what love is. Yeah.
You know, we go back to that kind of fairy tale Disney scenario sometimes of love, even just with our interactions with others, or kind of filtered through that stereotypical, not to be diminutive about that, but just, you know, we do develop a lot of those conditioned beliefs, a lot of those ideologies of love that become a little filtered. I'll say filtered. You know, if we filter them through a distorted lens sometimes. They'll love me when, you know, or I'll love them if, with a lot of conditionality, rather than that unitive acceptance and openness that's just that vulnerable, raw, accepting love. There again has that mindful boundary of what's healthy and nourishing.
Absolutely. Discernment, for all of us. Yes.
Discernment, yeah. I think that's our alignment. What is the ultimate thing, or the ultimate two or three things, Alara, that you feel block that connection?
Right away, I hear this belief that there is good and evil, right or wrong, right? It is polarity. It is duality. And again, in unity consciousness, there is no polarity. So as soon as we start seeing through the filter of wrong, right, good, bad, good, evil, which I think is just all over the spiritual community of like the light versus the dark, we're fighting the dark, we're at war with the dark. It's coming from already that perception of, for one, we are at war with what? Ourselves? It's only
ultimately, it's an ego driven from a certain perspective that.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's, to me, is this wonderful thing when I discovered that nine phases of unity ego development. You know, we're always, I say always, by and large, I feel from my experience, we've been conditioned to only utilize ego as a tactic, as a defensive mechanism. He has an ego. It's an outward projection. It's lacking that love of openness, vulnerability, conscientiousness, all of those higher sense of conscious being, whether it's filtered through a self or not, that brings us back into that dimension of oneness. You know, I'm trying to even challenge myself to remove the ideas of hierarchies and labels, because we're conditioned even to those things.
Well, you know, I believe that when we say higher self or higher densities or higher dimensions, we're talking about the concentration of light, right? Which is a higher, there literally is a higher frequency. That does not mean better than.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Same as lower. That does not mean less than. It is a lower frequency, which is, you know, a wavelength, right? That's true. That's science.
Curse at a quicker rate. Yes.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But again, we start putting this label on like lower means bad, higher means good, right? And so all of it, as soon as we see anything through the filter of duality, we are already limiting, right, our availability to love.
That's a great energy to sit with. And I'm ultimately feeling that I was doing a lot of prep today, just looking at a lot of new concepts. And I want to dive back into that expanded idea of ego from our programming, just within the data and information we're sharing. How do we form that bridge where we move past that kind of definitive idea of egocentrism, you know, where it's looking at self? I see a large pattern where sometimes that new energy of focus on the self might be leading a little astray. There again becomes a little subjective, but I see culturally looking at the pattern where we're becoming hyper-focused or exceptionally emphasizing of egocentricism in a lot of ways. Sometimes that becomes unbeknownst because of the subconscious connection. Sometimes the way we're filtering it, where we disconnect from that ultimate connection to that unit of love.
I also feel like there's always a swing of the pendulum, isn't it? Oftentimes when we've been over here and we drop that, it swings to the other side, you know, because we have to play in the experience. That's what we're doing, right? Is experiencing. And so when we're stuck away from that. And we're trying to all be sheep and we're trying to all fit in. And then we want to like, oh, wait, I'm a unique expression of the light of God. What does that feel like? We tend to like kind of lean into that, you know, and yeah, that gets filtered through the distortions that are already there. But that too is an experience, right? The when the pendulum swings the other way, it too holds value so that we can find once again where those polarities meet and God is revealed.
Those polarities are heavy with me. Not heavy, but prominent. Let me put it that way. There is a subconscious connection to that problem. At times it does become heavy. But only because I have that love that can hopefully merge us back beyond that heaviness that we often get stuck in. I'm looking at that idea of duality. Sometimes is there a purposefulness?
Absolutely.
In that duality of perspective, we lean so heavy in that idea of non-duality that itself can become polarizing and resisting it and pushing that energy away. You know, where again, you know, going back to that idea of seeing light and dark and just being acceptant of it rather than forming those resistive energies.
Well, it's where they exist, right? And where the polarities come together, they create friction. And friction is the growth of the universe. Like that friction is what allows us to expand, right? So that's why in third density, these, you know, fourth density, even we, our soul has so much opportunity for growth because duality exists. There's a lot of friction. Like we could all say that we experience friction, right? Because of those duality, right? And so that's where we, you know, we come up against ourselves, right? Like the light ourselves is coming up against the dark ourselves, and we're colliding and creating friction. And that friction is where we see, of course, God, but where we really, it's like the rubber meets the road. Right. Like the tire understands how it functions with how the road functions and what happens when those two come together. And so they're both functional. And when they come together, something occurs. And that's the friction. And when we're in these densities where we have polarity, that's the advantage that we get. That's exactly the advantage we get is of duality. Whereas when we get into sixth density consciousness, there is no duality. And now our soul evolves much slower. And it's much more like, for lack of a better description, challenging to evolve because the friction isn't as radical and in our face.
Do you think sometimes that idea of the friction itself might become a construct of the ego in its own battle to inhibit that?
What do you mean?
Looking at friction as the only way we grow. Do you feel sometimes we inherently get overly focused on that? And we just hinder that ability to grow out of flow, to grow out of simplicity.
Yeah. So if you're defining that friction as drama in life, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't see it that way personally.
I feel I ultimately have to be challenged to grow. I think that itself becomes a polarity. I think that itself becomes its own mental dualism that we leverage sometimes for various reasons. It becomes a filter of the ego ultimately. Why is the ego creating that need to see that perspective?
I love that. And like I said, and when you get into higher densities, that lessens.
Yeah.
Because again, there is no polarity. Yeah. So when in the conversation of how is polarity positive, that's what I would say. That was my response, right? Okay. Is that it creates friction. It creates the opportunity for us to realize ourselves through what is happening in our external reality that seems uncomfortable. Right? That seems challenging. But absolutely, as we progress out of duality, that doesn't need to be the case anymore as far as the expansion of our soul.
So here's one that I like to sit with a lot, and one that I see recurring through client work, through community interactions, that battle between what we label positive and what we label negative. And sometimes being the abhorrent, complete rejection of all negative sometimes. Where do we reunite those two to where you can also see the value in that negative, where you don't resist negative? Sometimes just that idea of challenge alone, well, that's a negative perspective, so I'm going to run from it.
Yeah, I think that really comes to the body and the feeling of discomfort, right? Because for me, when I feel, you know, quote unquote, lower vibratory energies, my higher self has just taught me how to breathe into them, to expand into them, right? And So I feel like, how do we resolve that? How do we bridge those energies is by, again, the willingness to be present in them, the willingness to have them hold energy of presence simultaneously as, you know, quote unquote, the positive, right? That they exist simultaneously and we can experience them that way if we really allow ourselves through relaxation of our being, relaxing into it. Relaxation is largely misunderstood from my perspective. It's not rest. It's not doing anything.
Would you, from your perspective, I'm trying to get a feel for you, would that then kind of move more toward openness, vulnerability, conscientiousness, where you're just aware of that state?
The state of what?
Of relaxation.
I think relaxation is a skill that I personally practice and I teach my students to practice because of the absolute power of it. Because when we come across things that we find uncomfortable that we have deemed, right, in some level through our subconscious beliefs, like not good, wrong, we don't like it, it means something, right? All those
things. Where we inherently have to create the challenge to grow sometimes. Yes. Here's a great way to relate with that and the experience that I recently shared, that idea of mediocrity itself. What comes up for you whenever that word mediocrity comes to light?
I think it's just one more label along with inadequacy.
Yeah. And I had this interaction with a particular individual without getting into particulars, but just that idea of, well, how can you grow if you don't have some view of that mediocrity? It's like, well, for me, it becomes a more logical concept that there's a middle to everything. There's an average to all of our actions and behaviors. See, we have an average of where we vibrate. You might have this emotional vibration, but you might have this thought vibration where they're not maybe on an even keel, you know, but even within our consistency, there's a statistical average of how often we do things. When we look at that label mediocrity, culturally, we've taken that word from literally back to Latin. The literal meaning of it at its initial inception was to meet in the middle. Had nothing to do when you go back to the actual intent and definition of why we're creating this meaning to be a judgmental term. It had no comparison aspect. It was all about reuniting unity, meeting in the middle and finding a common ground. Where do we form that disconnect from that concept then starts to signal where some of those filters come in, where some of that energy disconnects, where our resonance goes all over the map as an energetic body and energetically interconnected.
You know, I've noticed that so much about words. Like the word vulnerability, if you look it up in the dictionary, is like weakness. You know, like we have redefined these words through our society and through our perceptions of them and taken them out of their roots.
For me, it all goes back to context. Are you willing to consider those different perspectives?
Yes.
And just allow them to flow. Where is your optimum sense of connection? Where is your optimum energetic vibration within the bigger scheme of everything? That's a hard space for many individuals to walk through, especially if they've engaged with trauma, especially if they've had harsh climates and environments in their conditioning, filtering through that even itself. You know, well, then we develop sometimes that idea, well, I'm going to get rid of all of my filters. Well, you have to have that ability to kind of filter things to know if this is non-beneficial, if it's unhealthy, if it's adverse, then that idea of differentiation becomes valuable to us, meaningful to us. How do we leverage that with an empowered state?
Yeah, see, absolutely. All of this is very mental, right? And what I say about relaxation is it brings in the embodiment side of it, right? Because as soon as you're like, okay, labels are good because we get to discern and differentiate and compartmentalize and now labels are bad, right? And I can't like that's all mental construct. Whereas when we're present in the body, we're available to, for one, again, what are we feeling in the context of when we bring in the word mediocrity, right? Like just feel that in your body. What do you feel? And can you just allow it to be and breathe into your body through relaxation, breath, just breathing, letting yourself feel those energies, that's where you move past those mental constructs of trying to understand from the mind, the human mind, which is radically limited in most of its abilities to contemplate the totality of the universe, and particularly with love, right? We don't find that in our mind. Our mind is there to translate information, light, into our understanding, right? Where we find the truth of beyond these labels and these mental constructs is in the heart. And that's in our body, right? And I would even go as far to say, I teach very much the sacral chakra, the sacral, the heart, the pineal, and the three creator centers. Because a lot of people are like, the heart, and then they never get down into those lower bodies. We have to be able to be willing to sit with all those perspectives, right? Sit with the duality, sit with and feel it all, because that's where our real power is, when we're able to feel everything and experience it very viscerally and not judge it and not try to deny it, not try to push it away. That's very powerful. And that's where we really experience unconditional love.
Now, I find a lot of interest in some of those perspectives where we start to form our own divisions, our own disconnect, where somehow now all of a sudden the brain and what goes on above the neck is its own wicked redheaded stepchild that we push away, and it's not a part of the rest of the body. From a broader perspective, I can witness at times where that might be a possible perspective. Let me frame
Absolutely.
It that way.
Right.
Where we say, well, it is only the heart. The mind is out to get us. So let's discount it and let's shove it over in this corner. And it's all about what I'm feeling in the body. And that's all the bad guy I get. We start to label it. And I say we.
But see, I feel like that's where
perspective,
when somebody's not really being present, that's what they do. Yeah. Like, again, that's still being in a mental construct.
Yeah.
Because we need all of it, right? We need all of us.
It all plays a role when it's time for that thing to interact and form that processes. I think ultimately consciousness is there and standing waiting. Well, are you going to do your part or not? Not to be subjective and judgy, but it stands by and waits with love. Mm-hmm. Here's where this might happen. Let's run with that. That's kind of where my perspective stands on it more and more now, is like, let's run with that. It's not stop. We're not disconnected from it. It's just standing there in love.
Yes.
Kind of like when you have to allow somebody to realize their own unfolding with something.
Yes.
This behavior is causing me this result. We know by and large that tendency in human beings can be to resist that feedback and input. And I'll go to my own extreme in my subjectiveness and say, by and large, we condition how to reject all of that feedback rather than being open and vulnerable to it.
Mm-hmm.
We form a lot of constructs that say, well, it's all about myself and how I want myself to be. Those are the blind spots a lot of times that surface in others that keep you from reconnecting, not only through that concept of self, but to that higher love and that higher power.
Yeah, the ability to just allow all to really be in exactly how it's showing up is wisdom.
Now, to me, that's, again, contextualized and nuanced. If somebody is harshly saying, you dumbass, you got this all wrong and da 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 da, and you'll never be anything. Well, that's not love. Sorry, I got to check out from that with a healthy distance, healthy psychological distance, healthy personal distance. I think with that personal distance for me now, I can step back and also say, but okay, what was underlying that? You know, what in their own experience?
Love.
What might have my interactions also triggered in that person, triggered being very loose, might have instigated or incited that response? Was there something in their own reflection that mirrors back something in me? How does that interaction happen? Being able to step back from that gives you that objectivity, that love to go back to compassion, to go back to that union and say, but what is really in here?
I think it's availability again to the experience, like being present with what is, because no experience, I don't feel like is, you know, what's the word? It just doesn't coincidence, right?
Yeah.
Everything has value in it if we're willing to see the value that it holds.
That's an interesting one for me. Here's a for instance. is the acknowledgement of certain behaviors, like at where the perception might be that this person is acting in a way that's affronting. I'm even becoming very ambiguous at trying to avoid subjectively labeling it and creating that conflict. But take, for instance, an assumption is made by an individual. I'm going to try to put this in a fourth person perspective. And that's something I've been trying to work for in myself. How do we move to those fourth person perspectives that takes that context of self out of the way so you just see the interaction? Mm-hmm. So you assume, whoever you is being the character, playing the avatar, that somebody in their actions, in their conversation, meant to imply a certain thing about you. If that's very apparent because they name you in that interaction specifically, Ted, in their interaction. Does it become a victimization if you point out people will villainize you, for an instance? Do you automatically assume some of that victim role, or does that victim role totally enrobe you? Is there benefit sometimes in just seeing how you were sometimes victimized by that? Mm. To me, it becomes just different perspectives. Mm-hmm. It's one that, through a specific instance, I will say even, I'll own it, take responsibility, where pointing out that, yes, sometimes people's actions do put you in a certain role of victimhood, quote unquote. That will sometimes happen as a possibility. How would you sit with that energy? I'm curious to see your response with our interaction.
Yeah, again, I just feel the experience of it. So being a victim is an experience. Seeing yourself not as a victim is experience, right? Seeing yourself not as a victim in a victimized situation is an experience. Seeing yourself, it's all about the experience. And as you said, bringing yourself into fourth person.
Yes.
I find the more perspectives that we can open to in like a given circumstance, right? Like this occurred seemingly in one perspective, this person said something to this person that hurt this person's feelings. They felt like a victim, but then in that moment, if we're able to allow ourselves as many different perspectives outside of those two individualized perspectives, we really open up the door to what would be the complete truth. Because again, that's ultimately where different polarities are meeting and God is revealed. I'm not a victim. I am a victim. Yeah. You're a perpetrator. I'm a victim. I'm not a victim of a non-victim. It's just all about duality and polarity, which again plays a role and is powerful. And the more that we can see it in the different ways, the different perspectives, and bring those in and allow them to be all true simultaneously, that they are all true. You can simultaneously believe that you're a victim. You can simultaneously believe you're not a victim. You can simultaneously believe that you're not a victim of a victimized situation. And all of those can be true. All of those are true, right? In the context of you're seeing it through that filter. None of those are right or wrong. And they all hold value. And I would say, when you give yourself the availability to all of that, I feel gain a broader perspective of what is.
It
plays a lot with
avatars and roles in essence that we're putting on and playing. And sometimes we battle with that very idea, looking for that certainty of who and what I believe I am, who and what my purpose is supposed to be in any situation. I've got a very broad perspective on that. Perhaps I don't, for me, I can only speak for that avatar, feel I have any one divine defined reason why I might have manifested and spawned into this materialization. I am able, from my perspective, to see value and purpose in any number of directions with any given interaction.
Yes.
Why, for me, and this again is how I filter my perception of it, do I feel inclined to only choose one reason? Becomes very limiting and inhibitive for my creative perspective. I can find a million and one values and meanings, and that can become, when I realize with compassion and empathy how others perceive and interact, maybe a little insensitive to others who might find themselves in that role of struggling with those ideas. I have to feel like I have that one drive. That's their ability to form that meaning and perception. How do we, from your perspective, I'm going to ask you on this regard, how from your perspective do we start to bridge some of those potential gaps in our differences in perspective, in our differences in meaning and value?
By listening, by being present with it. I think it's so hard for humans. Yeah. Again, we hold so much tension in the body that is unnoticed, unrealized. So again, this is my own personal experience with my own body, as well as work that I do with my clients. Oh, I don't have any tension. Okay, great. Then as we go through the process, wow, they realize how much tension they're holding in their body. And so when we're approached with an idea, a concept, a perspective that seems to be either opposite of what we believe, or, you know, opposing, or something that is not the same, right? Let's just put it that way. Not the same. It triggers our belief structures that this is what it is, right? That it's this. What do you mean? It's not that, it's this. And you know, that we do that for safety, right? We do that for safety. Yeah. And that's why we try to bring people around us that believe those same things, because then we feel safe, right? But if we feel safe in our body and we release that tension fundamentally, because that tension is truly where we don't actually believe that we're safe, and we're holding tension and we're being in a state of fight or flight, which, you know, humanity is just addicted to. And we are just willing to listen to other perspectives and be with it. Just be with the energies, not right or wrong, good or bad, not trying to even change anything. This is something I've been really playing with, and sounds like you've been playing with it a lot as well over the last couple of years.
Inherently, that might be one of those core ways where that resistance and that fear-based response tends to surface. You know, we are so bent on finding those differences and rejecting them rather than just
for safety. Yes.
You know, and it's not to say we have to be completely open and accepting to all differences, but just to see it and recognize it, to have that empathy and compassion to say, there are unique spots in our being. There are unique spots where if the same consciousness surfaced in the same way, how would that thing perpetuate?
Well, and again, if we're all one, right? And consciousness is being created through that seemingly opposing belief structure, and then through your belief structure, right? How is that really not the same if we're all one? So yeah, like you said, you don't have to take on those beliefs and say, this is now what I believe. But again, can you realize that they exist simultaneously? And to me, that's very much in presence, because here in this moment is simultaneity, right? In presence is where we experience that there is only the now. So through our bodies, because our bodies are always in that now. So our bodies gift us a portal as humans into the present moment. And through our bodies, we can say, okay, I can have this idea and you can have that idea, and we can be here simultaneously in the awareness that it is all love, awareness, light, consciousness, God, source, creation.
I feel like we've had the conversation today. Maybe
we record it.
Maybe, we're recording, and maybe we just go back and touch up a few things. But we definitely are finding a riff on it. One thing, you know, I'm going back to where I was today, and I find this happening a lot as I'm preparing for conversations. I wouldn't necessarily say intuitive, because sometimes it's intuitive, sometimes it is just in that flow of consciousness. I'll differentiate that in a minute. But going back in the flow of my conversation and flow of where consciousness guided me today is looking at that idea of ego dynamicism. You know, sometimes we look at ego as that bad devil in the closet that we're running, rather than it being a dynamic play process and series of processes of who and how we surface as a materialized human being on this dimension and level of conscious existence here in this vibration on Earth. I hope that covers all of my labels and baggage in the let's not try to marginalize anybody. Let's be inclusive. But dynamicism is just embracing depth and unity. Ego dynamicism then becomes not really polarized, but acknowledging of egocentrism, where I'm only centered in an idea or concept of self. Ego dynamicism allows us to see that same level of ego, that same consciousness of psyche, that same awareness in others. That's where I'm going with that, where I've been just prior to our conversation. But looking at ego systonic and ego dystonic, Systonic being in harmony and acceptance of what our goals and needs are, but also being able to see, reflect the same in others. And ego dystonic being the opposite, where we're inherently tied up in our own constructs. I think that's an area where we can guide others, maybe form different perspectives of that. Ego itself is just that psyche or that mentalization of who and what we are and where our place is in the universe and how we form that relationship and connection back to that unified sense of love and conscious self as one being.
I always see the ego as, this is what my higher self always tells me, that we are like stained glass. And all of us have a unique pattern of that stained glass, right? Through which the light of God shines. So our ego is that glass through which the light of God shines. And when it's, you know, distorted, or the word that you used, you know, and it's dirty, and the light of God can't shine through it, right? And so it becomes more of like that internal, it ultimately is like a form of selfishness, right? But not in the context of how we've deemed selfishness. Yeah. And you know, that this is only what I am is simply this, because it's like this containment of the light of God. Whereas as we have worked through the process, you know, we begin to wipe off that glass and clarify it, and that light of God gets to really shine through that unique presentation, that unique pattern of stained glass.
We look at those two prefixes in those. Systonic, we think of synergy or systemized, working as a system. And dystonic, being kind of associated with dissonance or that disconnect.
Yes.
Disharmony.
I like those words. I've never heard of them. So yeah, I was trying to write them down, but I don't have
a pen. I stumbled across that through another coach on LinkedIn a while back and have since went down that path. I think those are those kind of defining moments with that idea of ego, where we see that idea of polarity, where we see that conflicted idea of duality sometimes come to play, to come to light. Where those filters start to disengage or engage becomes the key interplay of how we reconnect sometimes with that unity. And that's where we've tried to help guide others throughout all of our programming. Inherently, that idea of programming can become dissonance for some of us, where we think, well, I've got to reject all programming, but we develop a program within our own interaction every day that forms consistency. We develop a program that becomes where we interact, how we function, you know, but we reject that idea sometimes out of some of those ego filters, out of some of those subconscious beliefs, out of some of that disconnected pattern, where that glass gets a little dirty and muddy. And sometimes either ourselves or by the compassionate feedback of others, sometimes we have to rely, I feel, on others to kind of help us wipe that glass when we're incapacitated by
it. Yes.
We're incapacitated by that ability to allow that glass to be wiped clean because we're disconnected from that harmony and unity of love, not just within ourselves, from all conscious beings. We form that dissect in and we don't see that other as ourselves, lovingly wiping that glass away. And that can be kind of a conflicted relationship sometimes, especially when it's not rooted from a place of love.
Yeah. And what you were kind of saying to the systems and, you know, what was coming through then is, as we know, the masculine, the feminine, I always see it as a trinity, masculine, feminine, and child, right? And it's the same as the chakras. And that's how I see it. And that's how I teach. And, you know, through that trinity, you know, again, it's the realization that all is simultaneous, truthfully, right? We are simultaneously the feminine, the masculine, and the child. And we play in these, you know, sometimes we're more of the masculine. Sometimes we're more of the feminine. Sometimes we're more of the child as we are, you know, it's kind of like I get this image of, you know, consciousness moving and evolving. You know, it's not stagnant. There is an evolution and a process to all of this. And I bring that forward because of your comment to the systems. And, you know, sometimes what I've experienced in my life is it's like, oh, okay, you know, as I swung into the feminine, all right, the systems, like let go of all the systems, right? And then, you know, and then what you find is you're very, the feminine is very chaotic and she has no, like she's really hard to even conceptualize and put into words. And so we need the structure of the masculine, right? To help put her into context that can even be understood. And so it's like when you try to swing too far into one of them, you know, what you find is where, you know, it isn't the totality, you know, and again, that has value. Like I swung really hard into the feminine and what I found is nobody could even understand what I was saying. they were like, what? I was like, yeah. But I felt it and I experienced it, right? And then is again, it comes back where again, that trinity and or the polarity meets. That's where this like, this is beautiful movement where consciousness is again, all of it simultaneously, right? Consciousness is the feminine, the vagueness, the obtuseness, the chaoticness, the nonlinear. And it's very analytical and straightforward and very much back to the origination of our conversation. You were talking about complexity. And I always love to say the universe is simultaneously like radically complex, but vastly simple, right? Like truth is like, drop the mic, simple.
Yeah. You know, when we look at even the core fabric, it starts with the basic simple structures that just replicate and duplicate in complexity and just kind of mirror the patterns. And where then do we become subjectively labeled and inhibited by that view sometimes becomes our greatest sticking point. You know, even just considering new ideas sometimes becomes our greatest weighty action that keeps us from just engaging with love.
Which I think with the love and the idea of the new ideas and what we're talking about with bringing in many perspectives, I think this is really true to where we are right now as, you know, Pluto coming into Aquarius. We're really wanting to expand our perspectives, right? And bring in new ideas. And I think it's a really great conversation of how does that all play with that realization of unconditional love, absolute love.
This has been such a fabulous, creative, loving, re-engaging, reconnecting conversation to have today, Alara.
If you were to leave us with three thoughts,
three, where are you being guided to re-engage us with that state of love? What might those be? Sit with that moment.
The first one is absolutely that where polarity meets, God is revealed. Like I am taught that left and right. So everywhere the seemingly opposites are, when we allow them to exist simultaneously, we truly experience love. And I would also say that when we are unable to allow for that simultaneity because we do not feel safe and we're holding tension in our body, it's like we are contracting away from love, even though, you know, that's not truly possible. It's an understanding that that tension, you know, it's like I always say with a clenched fist, there's nothing can move through here. No energy, no water. No water can move through a clenched fist, right? And that's tension. Whereas when we relax, we allow for those realizations of love. We allow ourselves to feel and experience that simultaneity. So tension does not allow us to feel that simultaneity.
This has been truly a liberating, freeing conversation from my perspective that has just allowed that relaxed, nice conversational space. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes, thank you as well. This has definitely been a very different conversation than I have ever had. And I really enjoyed it.
How do you feel about allowing this to stand, allowing this to be the voice that speaks for our connection?
If you feel it's good for your audience, I'm good with it. Like it's for me, it's about your audience and what you feel resonates with them.
Yeah, let's sit with it and see if we want to dot any I's or cross any T's. I know we'll go back and do some intros and things like that. We didn't really do any introduction of you and I. We don't tend to do that a whole lot in our conversations for a lot of reasons, mainly because it removes us out of that phase of, I have to feel like I have to put on the performance. I feel like I have to validate everything in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's freeing when we don't feel put on that spot that I have to explain who I was. I have to give that reasoning why I'm here and why my experience is meaningful.
It's so interesting because it kind of goes back into just really briefly, you know, the whole story thing, like tell your story. Yeah. But it's funny because I have a podcast too, and I find that I don't want to go down that road of people's story. Like I want to get into just bringing their genius on and like dive into the conversation of it. Cause we can get kind of, it feels like we start to get lost in their story and the ego and that side of it rather than like, let's just bring our geniuses together and see what happens.
Even that space can be kind of a reactionary space that takes us out of that flow then of just engaging where we're going consciously. Cause then we start to form those associations of identity. We start to subject, I have to admit that there are times where then I start to hear some of the things and it's like, okay, why are we going down this path? Because we kind of aligned a pre-call or we kind of aligned a conversation earlier. And that's one reason why I like leaning on my team because they take me out of that equation and then throw me back in just in the role of the questioner. You are the consciousness that's engaging. You are interacting. Mm. You know, We've like went to almost complete AI on forming our lines of questioning. You know, it's one reason why.
Oh, we're I saw that when you because it felt I was like, this feels very AI. And, I was like, yeah.
Well, it's ironic. The more we use AI, even within our organization, even within our writing, it's like everything else in life. It's also conditioning us through those.
Oh, I love AI.
Beings.
Yeah.
It's made me a better communicator.
Absolutely.
I know because my wife even has said, there are times where I don't know where your mind is going with things because of the way your unique genius comes out. It's not necessarily how she always labels it, but just the way you speak. Misses that mark sometimes with connecting with others because your perspective is sometimes so diverse or sometimes off somewhere else that there's a gap there. And that AI has allowed me to kind of reconnect that in my own interactions. As a team, it's allowed us to kind of go out of our own groupthink, which becomes a cultural thing. You know, you get embodied in that tribalism of these are my people. Mm-hmm. We automatically form, for me, that perspective of divide when we say, well, I'm only going to interact with my people, or I'm only able to limit myself to my ability to interact with these people because they're my people. Starts to form for me some of that divide that we're trying to bridge and go back from. I say go back from.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, it's that safety and that inability to be with posing factors. I just have to say, I love what your wife said, because what I found with talking to you is I had to really tune into your consciousness specifically to be able to follow through with where you were at. Because it felt initially when we were talking that you were jumping. And then when I tuned into your consciousness specifically, that's not what I experienced. But it took me a moment. I had to like really tune into you. That's why I said it's a very different conversation than I've ever had.
Interesting feedback. And I don't know that I've ever been that open and available to receive that. Thank you for sharing that.
No, it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, I think your mind is incredible.
Without becoming egocentric in that, thank you. I'm gracious for that feedback. And for me, then that resonates and reflects back that how much of that is where those ego filters come up and where do those differences. I can feel my own ego filter sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes starting to surface where those pushbacks start to form or where those filters start to call in. With a lot of the study I've done, I've been able to identify more and more of it. Fear of complexity for me has always been, I can't say non-existent, but existent to a slighter degree from my own perspective of self. You know, I can target that back to my upbringing. It's definitely a conditioned response because we were taught to seek out questioning. We were taught that when that resistance comes up, We were Beautiful. Reinforced that belief Beautiful. Rather than being stifled in that anxiousness
Beautiful. Yeah.
to move through it. I am inherently and infinitely grateful that we had that conscious awareness in our upbringing, especially from my mother, that, you know, and it didn't become stifling for me. I can only speak for me. I don't know my siblings, but I can witness where they utilize that skill. It become an asset that rather than run from that complexity, rather than run from that nuance, rather than more than anything, being overwhelmed by the fear. If you are fearful, embrace the fear and then question and move through.
Yeah. I mean, that was literally my experience with it, right? Because I didn't feel it to be ego.
Yeah.
I felt it to be kind of a constant switch around. Of like, okay, this is it. And then I don't know, is it? And then this is it. And then I don't know, is it? And then this is it. Yeah. And then I don't know, is it? And that's where I had to like breathe into it and like feel into that shift. And like that is the complexity, you know, of it, or the questioning of the, it's the questioning, because it's this constant, your brain is always doing this shift, which I think is really, really beautiful. I didn't feel ego in it, just from my perspective. I'm not trying to toot your horn. I'm literally just telling you how I experienced it and how it took me a second, because it was this constant shift around, you know.
I'm so grateful for that feedback too. And I know even from my own perspective that there are times where I know where that can create dissonance with others.
Absolutely.
Especially, it can go into polarity right away. Some people perceive it as that kind of egocentric response that lacks that humility. But where do you balance those two then becomes different perspectives. You know, I'm trying to even shift that, you know, is it a challenge for me or do I just accept it openly and say, yes, there are differences in how we interact.
Yes.
I've always been fascinated from that past life perspective then, from that perspective that I'm trying to move into that mindset. And that's where my energy and action went with.
Absolutely.
Where in my past life, what's coming in from that, you know, and how is that relating? You know, that's a fascination for me that I'd love to go down that rabbit hole and hear more about it.
It's such a beautiful journey because you see the gifts that you have and how in, you know, particular, I actually prefer to call them parallel lives. I use the word past life because most people just don't even like parallel life is too much for them. So I just say past life. That's the known statement. But, you know, lives that are, again, simultaneity, right? So they're happening right now. And so like in this life, you know, this skill, you really are spending a lot of time cultivating and you have that skill here in this life. Mm-hmm. And when you connect vibrationally through your consciousness to this life, you really bring that depth of that skill into this life. It's so like, it's such a tremendous, when I take people through it, they are just blown away by just the threads, right? The common threads and like, oh, wow, I've had that gift. And now that they start to realize the absolute depth and genius of that they have of that gift in another life, they literally give it permission, right? To come into this life. And it really cultivates itself in a really beautiful way. So I would be intrigued for you to figure that out as well.
Stepping into that framework, and some of this was just me stepping back out of it, stepping into that framework, I inherently, whether it's intuitive or some of it's conditioned, I know both. I can understand both, that some of it is conditioned belief, some of it is intuitive. That's a whole gray line of conversation we could have a whole nother talk on. But I know instinctively that I sit sometimes with one foot here in this dimension, sometimes this foot in this dimension, sometimes his head over here, and sometimes his heart over here. I know I can pinpoint back to a very young age, probably around the age of, in this present dimension, 4, in that concept of self and identity and reality. I'm fascinated by looking at, you know, all of those dimensions and looking at how we're bringing that now to light and starting to form some of those connections. You know, there again, ego, I know ego steps in and I start to sometimes poke holes in those theories for various reasons. You know, sometimes that idea of just, well, we're oversimplifying the idea of vibration, you know, why do I have that need then? And I know it's a need or a drive, desire to poke those holes, to question it. And how do I do that balanced with compassion and empathy? And how do I let some of it go at times? How do I keep those different aspects, those different dimensions, grounded and in unity and in love.
And still allow yourself the beauty of that questioning, right? Like that's a really, I would say that's that beautiful point of all of that merging for you.
Well, thank you for that feedback. And I've kind of dominated that energy. So I have to gracefully acknowledge that in myself right now. Well, this truly has been such a fun connection. And I've been looking forward to it, following your social media. I know I have reluctantly kept the distance. I do know that there is a certain part of my characteristics and my skills and traits that I do sometimes keep at an arm's length, and I don't try to dissect it too much. I know that there is a tendency to, sometimes I know it's because inherently there's going to be a part of me then that pushes back sometimes before that open acceptance is there for others. So I do inherently know that and believe that to be a truism about some aspect of my self and social constructs. And I'm being judicious with my wording here.
Yes, I sense that.
And there again, it's a kind of guardedness. Is it guardedness or is it awareness? Is it conscientiousness and just simply saying, well, you are trying to straddle those worlds in a way that's productive and loving. So even in how you present that, has to be mindful, you know, has to be brought to the heart, has to be guided, maybe not necessarily filtered, sometimes filtered, but guided through those energetic channels. I know there's times where I've got my foot in the wrong energy and it's up my ass.
Absolutely, as we all do, for sure.
And sometimes that head is up there and various other parts.
I've experienced the same thing as far as, you know, it's shifted a lot for me, but as far as, you know, the, is it disconnection? Am I placing myself outside of these spaces or not desiring to connect deeply for my own protection? And for whatever reason, and this is just my current experience, you know, I always find, you know, as we move through the spiral, we gain more perspective and more wisdom. But my current experience has just really been this, this deep desire to just engage with all of it, you know, with all of it, like, and I'm not saying I find it easy. I don't necessarily. And sometimes I find it extremely, I'm extremely empathic. I feel on such a deep level that I find it quite challenging to breathe into my body and be with everything that I'm feeling from people, because I can feel their belief structures. I can feel their trauma and their pain so immensely, but I've learned not to close down from, and this is my point. Like for me, as my power as a woman and some of the Ma energy that I embody, it's about opening to those energies, like I've said before. And so this last couple of years for me has really been about like, okay, they're bringing this energy and I'm going to just breathe in. I'm going to be fully present with that energy. Without judgment, you know, just isness, beingness, existence, right? And what I encounter is bliss. And when I'm really able to do, which I'm not always able to do it, sometimes I'm just like, fuck this. I don't have the energy for this. You know, I don't even care right now.
Myself in that space of time.
You know, and I just gift myself that. Like if I just, you know, can't do it, I can't. But in the moments when I can, that's a sixth density unity. It's ecstatic. Mm.
That whole conversation or that whole theory about the levels of density, I'm endlessly fascinated about. I'd love to come back and have another conversation with you exploring those concepts specifically. Good. You know, from the male energy perspective of let's pick apart the system now. Starting at kind of that square one. And there again, going back to that youthful questioning that I was instilled and inspired with, let's look at it from ground zero and kind of learn it and pick it apart. And, you know, it's always been a fascination for me to see how those frameworks fit together. Mm-hmm. To kind of see where those bigger pictures kind of merge. And I know that that's at the fullest when I'm fully engaged consciously, where some of my greatest gifts come to light is that ability to then grasp those different worlds, to have those different connections, that one foot here and one head here.
Yeah. Like I said, you go in and then you're like, and then you're over here and then you're flipping, you know, like you're shifting into all these different areas. And then you, it's almost like you're, what I feel like the attempt is that you're doing very well is again, like all of the different perspectives of a given topic or comment or perspective or, you know, like experience, right? Like you're trying to dissect it into all the different perspectives. And then, you know, from that, you're shifting into something very differently. So
honestly, we'll call it out. I try to take all ideas of linearity and dimensionality and just flip them all on their heads, you know, and not say, well, I have to go on this step to get there. Over here, I'm over here because I'm able, I feel, to send those energy connections out because they're always there. You know, do I go down this thread and I'm still over here in this thread and it's never disconnected? Through that, I've found that consciousness can inherently channel itself inward and through.
Yes.
Removing myself from it and just allowing those threads to permeate, allowing the electricity and the energy and the vibration and all of the matter to just matter. Matter matters on its own. We don't have to make it matter. It matters on its own. Going back to Alan Watts, it's one of the greatest conversations I heard from Alan Watts. It's like, I like that meaning. I like that framework. I like that perspective. Matter doesn't have to matter. It matters on its own.
Yes, it does.
Therefore, it just becomes purposefulness, becomes my framework and meaning.
I want to just call out something that I was just shown by my higher self of something quite beautiful that's happened through our little connection here.
Yes.
I've brought in, you know, the parallel reality and hopefully planted a little seed there for you to explore with yourself. And simultaneously, you've planted even more of a seed. Again, I feel like in these past couple of years, the availability to different perspectives and how do we allow them simultaneously, you've given me a very different kind of approach to that. And just through experiencing you and your energy and again, your stream of consciousness, which I am going to allow that plant, that seed to be planted in my space and allow that to unravel and unfold however it deems, you know, to the purpose of love. So thank you.
Namaste, the light in me acknowledges the light in all of us.
Yes. Pretty much what we just did.
I repeat that mantra often, but sometimes now I'm even starting to question, well, does the light in me have to acknowledge the light in you in that framework that light in all of us shines through? I may start to morph that.
Oh.
I don't know if there again, we're going back to that kind of acceptance and acknowledgement and openness and love of just recognizing, seeing that inherent uniqueness that consciousness just surfaces as. Nevertheless, this has been a beautiful, loving, very expansive and open conversation that I truly cherish and honor. So thank you for
that. Absolutely.
Omar.
Yes, same. I appreciate it
greatly. Even amidst polarity, we invite you, our beloved listening community, to recognize love as a realization of oneness. Life's journey shows us how our past lives and parallel dimensions of being have shaped who and what we are and will forever be, united in one consciousness. The images we see and the thoughts we have in our daily lives all hold the influence of a subconscious connection, not only to the past, but also to the dimensions of our being. And when we embrace the gateway of ego dynamicism, we re-enliven our connection to the source of our being, returning to the unity of love. If you found value and meaning in this episode, please share it with a friend or loved one. And as always, we're grateful for you, our valued listening community. This has been The Light Inside. I'm Jeffrey Biesecker.